Hello, everyone. Welcome to Latter-day Struggles. This is Valerie, and I am here for you, my beloved subscribers. Thank you so much for your ongoing love and support. And I can't thank you enough for subscribing to this podcast. I have so much I want to talk about, so much so that, little confession here, sometimes I'm like, can I even keep this up? Is there, you know, two times a week? And it's occurred to me that honestly, the overflow of ideas and thoughts that I have about what needs to be talked about and discussed and addressed is so long that, weirdly enough, that feels like the least of my problems. I feel inspiration kind of coming over me that like, talk about this, talk about this, talk about that. And it takes time. And so because it takes time, I have taken so much away from my other professional endeavors that your willingness to pay me to offer to you the psychological content is something I can't adequately express to you. And so I just offer to you my heartfelt gratitude for your willingness to compensate me for the time and effort I put into the work that I so willingly offer to you. I feel very, very lucky that the work that I do is profoundly gratifying. It feels really, really good. I love your letters of support, and I read every one of them, and they mean a lot to me because this is also very, very hard work. As you know, I've had a couple of epiphanies where it's like, I wonder why I'm really kind of one of the only people that do this in the way that I do it. And then I pause for like half a second, and I'm like, I know exactly why I'm the only one that does this. This is hard. So thank you for being in my life. Those of you who support me in all of the various ways. And, you know, on that note, it has occurred to me that my groups, I hope I help you, but I know you help me. You are such a huge part of my support system. And I'm getting a little choked up here as I open this up on mixed faith marriages. You all know how much I care about this. I don't know if there's a population in more pain than couples in a marriage crisis because of their faith journey. And I know I'm not a big fan of, you know, creating a hierarchy of pain or anything like that. But I guess if I were just to say, when I look at the distress and the hopelessness, the relational hopelessness of people on a faith journey connected to the LDS Church, it's up there. And so I pause from time to time, and I spend some time on this. And this is why I've created these six classes on my website. It's why I bring these guests on who have success stories, because I want to offer hope. And it's also why I want to help you see and understand what's going on in your marriage so that you can have all of the tools that you need to know how to proceed in the most psychologically and spiritually healthy way possible. Of course, I hope that every marriage survives. I'm a marriage counselor. I care about marriage, but I'm also very well aware that some won't. And yet, if the worst thing happens, you know, which I think for many of us, losing that intimate relationship is devastating, of course. If that does have to happen, I want you to know very clearly and have an understanding of what is going on and what you're feeling and why you're doing what you're doing. Because the worst thing that we could have happen is to end a relationship and then begin another relationship down the road, making all of the same mistakes because we haven't made sense of what happened the first time. And I frequently say that with my couples that I still work with quite a few couples here connected to faith crisis on my platform. And I often say, if we don't figure it out now, you're going to figure it out eventually. It's just going to be through another set of heartache. And so let's tackle this. Let's look at this. And if there's a couple that cares a lot about each other, that right there is a resiliency worth holding on to. And I often say, you know, and feel, if both partners want the marriage to succeed, that oftentimes is enough. And then it's just about going through the valley of the shadow and self-confronting and really looking at yourself and dealing with what's going on in the context of the marriage through your own growth journey. And these marriages can prevail. They can overcome some very, very seemingly impossible challenges. Today, I wanted to just spend some time talking about, I created a list actually of why in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and its history and theology is this so challenging? Okay, so let's see how I do. I feel like this is a big task. This is a complex subject. I'm going to start from the very beginning, and you could probably all say this, you know, we could all sit, you know, sit in a room and say this together. What's going on here? What's the biggest thing that's going on here? And the answer, of course, is fear. People are afraid. I think there's an existential fear that everyone's going to be feeling because if it's your most intimate relationship, it's important to you. This is a relationship that matters. We come to this earth needing connection. Human beings are wired to be in connection. It's part of what makes us human. It's part of what makes us divine. We want and need each other. And for many of us, we desire to be in a pair bond. And having a journey or an experience that threatens that, it brings with it a fear that is likened to the fear of death. And so if you're feeling this, and if your partner is feeling this because of your journey, then that makes you normal. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing crazy about you. You're feeling this because it is in fact scary. It's threatening a very, very primal need, want, and desire that is very, very normal. And so first of all, I want you to give yourself some grace. Because your faith journey is activating a lot of fear in you and in your partner, it might mean that you love one another a lot and you don't want this thing to become so big that it prevents you from having the marriage that you are capable of, or that perhaps was a marriage that was a pretty decent one beforehand. I've had so many couples that I've worked with who've said, you know what, we had a decent marriage. We had a good marriage. We really like each other and we love each other. And then this comes in and it's like, it's this thing that we can't talk about and we can't handle. And it's just crushing us. And so to that, I say, well, now you have a chance to really grow. Maybe you haven't pushed up against that thing yet, that one thing that was going to cause you to grow in ways that you did not know you were capable of. And here we are. And so let's see if we can use this as a catalyst for the deepest and richest psychological and spiritual and relational growth that you've ever, ever had. Because I do think not only is that possible, I have seen it happen before. And so we feel this legitimate fear. And oftentimes, another thing that I think is very, very typical of couples in early faith crisis, or when one partner is in their early faith crisis, it is typical for partners or for both people in the relationship to have rather low levels of differentiation. If you want to dive very, very deeply into that, hopefully you've memorized these by now, because I've said them, you know, a number of times, but I feel very, very strongly about these things. This is, you know, you can sometimes go to a lot of therapy with a marriage counselor that maybe doesn't exactly know how to handle this issue. Or you could possibly just try and jump into one of these classes and just work through it and see how it goes at a fraction of the cost, honestly. But if you want to learn about the differentiation journey, I would really invite you to jump over to LatterdayStruggles.com and check out my second class, which is called The Growth-Oriented Marriage. It digs deeply into this concept of the importance, the vital importance of differentiating in a marriage. Again, when somebody starts a faith journey, usually they have just enough information to be dangerous. It's like all the alarm bells are going off. They don't know what to do with it. They're usually black and white thinking. And the inclination oftentimes is to throw the whole thing out and to, you know, run around like, you know, the house is on fire. That may feel very valid. And there may be some big things that feel really big. And I get that 1,000,000%. And also not generally the very, very best life plan if you have a partner who is very traditionally believing and they see you freaking out. It's probably not going to get you the thing that you want, which is that connection, right? And so in a relationship where partners are both minimally differentiated, they've never really practiced or even accessed this idea that the healthiest marriage is one where two people actually ourselves. They each have their own thoughts, feelings, desires, interests, beliefs, and they are able to share those with one another in a non-threatening way. Again, we don't really learn this in our culture at large, in Christianity and in Mormonism. It's not something that's very talked about. And so we come into marriage sometimes thinking that to the extent that we are the same, that means we are happy and healthy and united. And of course, it's simpler that way, but that isn't really the recipe for the growth of a soul. And so what I frequently feel and think and talk about is that when one is on the beginnings of their journey, it's like they don't really have all of the neurological updates necessary to manage a faith expansion journey. At first, it's just a full-blown crisis because they see that all is not well, and they don't necessarily have the framework to make sense of it. And then they bring that non-framework and that low skill set to a partner, and all the firecrackers start going off. And so couples are oftentimes in such a low state of differentiation that they don't even recognize that it's okay for people to think and feel and believe differently, and also at the same time to be in a healthy marriage. And so we don't have a very good skill set here in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints supporting one another on our inevitable journeys of growth. Well, I say inevitable. I guess sometimes it's possible that couples can go about their marriage and not grow. I think that's a tragedy, but does it happen? Sure. Because I think sometimes couples and human beings in general, they decide that being safe is way more important than growing. And so they'll just keep the marriage where it goes. However, if you hang out with me, you're probably not that person. You have endeavored to take that leap of faith and decided to grow. And in so doing, it is disrupting the equilibrium of your marriage. And part of what you're accessing here, as you talk to me or listen to me through my podcast, through my groups, through these classes, is you're learning how, in fact, to differentiate. And the beautiful thing about differentiating is the more differentiated we are, the more decent we are. Differentiating is not about becoming different and estranging and separating ourselves from other people. It's actually paradoxically the opposite. To the extent that I know who I am, what I believe in, what I stand for, what I feel, think, and care about, I am actually becoming more and more myself. I'm becoming more connected to my divine potential. And the more connected I am with my divine potential, the kinder and more loving I am, because I am embodying more and more of my divinity. And so as I differentiate, I become kinder and more loving towards you. So paradoxically, under-differentiated couples who don't know what they feel, think, want, desire, and believe, but just sort of blindly walk lockstep together because they are doing what they've been told to do, are not always the most decent partners to one another. And when they move into this journey and acknowledge that the more they grow closer to a differentiated sense of self, the kinder that they will be, sometimes couples really lean into this and they respect one another's journeys. If you want to jump back to Katie and Jeremy, that's exactly what this couple did. They went through all of the typical struggles and heartache and crisis and devastation and hopelessness. And then they leaned in and decided, you know what? Maybe this was meant to be all along. Maybe this is exactly what a marriage is supposed to do. And maybe this is exactly what I covenanted to do with God when I married this person, that I would learn truly how to love. And when I mean love them as they are growing, even though it's scaring me to death. That's what differentiation means. But we don't know that early on. And so we move into this and run around like chickens with our heads cut off, oftentimes not treating one another well on both sides of the marital equation. And it hurts us. And so because we don't have high differentiation skills, and that's not reinforced in our programs of the church, and sometimes socially and in our societies and families, it's like we have a lot of work, psychological and relational work cut out for us so that we can get the skill set to move forward, which is why I'm here, by the way. This is what I care so much about. So stick around and I will help you with this. And hopefully I already have, because I care profoundly about helping your marriages. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about why is it so hard for couples to do this journey together. I want to say this with a lot of respect, but I do feel that the rhetoric that many of us have been taught is not helpful. People that are more traditionally believing feel in some ways like they don't need any new information from their partner. They already have it all figured out because they've been told so many times by third parties what's going on in the heart and the mind and the soul of the person on a faith journey. This is so problematic that I don't have enough words to express the emotions that I feel about this, that just breaks my heart and hurts my soul. Because I also believe that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints earnestly wants to help marriages and families. And so again, they're at odds with themselves, probably very unintentionally. They don't realize that the rhetoric that comes out about what a journey is so harmful to marriages, and that sometimes couples or people choose to believe the narrative constructed by the church over the narrative of their actual partner, so much so that they won't even listen. We talked about that in our last episode. And so, of course, it's very, very scary to be in a situation where you feel as if you're having an experience and your partner either won't listen, or you feel that your partner is in fact kind of overcome by the adversary or has been consumed by something that makes them incompetent or incapable of feeling the spirit. On both sides of that equation, that rhetoric is very, very harmful because it prevents partners from being able to truly see the other. And keep in mind, in many cases, the other is their most beloved companion. It's their best friend. It's their person. And so I don't want a third-party institution getting in the way of the intimacy that is intended between two people and ordained by God themselves to help people look into the eyes of the other and say, what's hurting? I want to listen to you. I don't want to listen to something from the outside. I want to trust you. But I'm sad to say that some partnerships don't enjoy that because they have bought so much into an outside source telling them what the experience of their partner is instead of actually listening to the partner right in front of them, sometimes in tears. The next topic I want to tackle is, again, sensitive, and this is why I save a lot of the sensitive stuff for Fridays. And I do so with a lot of respect because I tackle things that I think are probably hard to hear and hard to say. But I feel in some ways also that the theology is harmful to marriages. The eternal marriage theology that says two people cannot be together forever unless they agree on certain fundamental beliefs sometimes paralyzes a partnership from being able to allow the other person to grow in very, very healthy ways. My wish would be that the theology invited unconditional love that accepts the reality that human beings are here to grow and change and develop. What I'm not saying is that human beings are allowed in a marriage to act in ways that are not loving or to act in ways that are outside of the value systems of the human beings that have decided to be in an intimate relationship with each other. That's not what I'm talking about. But what I am talking about is when two human beings come together and say, we want to share life together and we want to be together as, you know, spiritual, psychological, sexual, relational partners, there's something very antithetical to a promise to be there for one another when what we're actually saying is, but I can't be there for you in your inevitable changes that happen as people grow richer and deeper as their lives go on, which is exactly what we're supposed to do. And I worry deeply that the theology of eternal marriage, meaning that people can't see faith and belief differently, equals they can't be together forever, that puts couples in such a panic. And my heart goes out to the more traditionally believing partner in this position because they have not had the experience of their faith expanding partner or have not been exposed to whatever it is that is bringing about the faith journey. They are legitimately paralyzed in fear and panic that whatever's going on needs to stop because it is going to cost them their marriage for eternity. Do y'all realize how scary and big that is? I know you do. But it's the theology that prevents couples from actually being able to show that very love that Jesus Christ exemplifies through his life and ministry and mission. And that's a big deal. And so I guess what I'm saying here is, as we expand and grow, let's have compassion on one another. Let's have compassion on our more traditionally believing partner, because their fear is oftentimes rooted in a belief that means they will lose you, and it's because they love you. And from your part, I understand if you're the less traditionally believing person or you're the faith expanding person, I can understand how hopeless it feels to know, or at least begin to be knowing, that you're on an earnest journey and that God is loving this and it's on schedule and all is well, but you just are misunderstood. It's so painful. And I can see why it's easy to want to just like explode and be done. I get it. I see you. And I trust that as you make better sense of what's going on and take it easy, take it slow, be patient with yourself, allow your brain and your soul to sort of do all of the psychological and spiritual and cognitive updates that need to happen before you make big choices. But I understand why this is so painful. Next topic I want to tackle is the possibility that our being in a patriarchal culture and institution might be playing into some of the complexities that are happening in your faith expansion journey. Now, I can appreciate that this may or may not be relevant in your particular situation. I have, of course, worked with many, many men who are on a faith expansion journey, and their female partners may very much want things to just stay the same. They may be in that space where being a part of a patriarchy either has felt safe to them, it has not occurred to them what that exactly means. And so they're not having an experience that troubles them about that. And so I want to make space for that while also acknowledging that it's possible, because I've seen it firsthand, that when a female is on a faith journey and she has a more traditionally believing male partner, there is often a sense that I don't trust her. She is not the authority figure. She does not have the priesthood. She is not the spiritual leader of the family. And sort of this sense that I have been let down by this person who is not doing what she sort of promised to do. She's not participating in the roles that she promised to participate in. And that furthermore, she doesn't have much competence or trustworthiness in what she is experiencing. Again, I don't think this is always the case. And it could be that there are females on a faith journey and their male partner may be in a lot of pain, completely and totally disconnected to this. But I am just wanting to presence that that is not always the case. As a matter of fact, I remember it's been quite some time, but I remember talking to a partner who was really struggling with his wife's journey and making very clear that this was perhaps the first and only time she's ever voiced her opinion strongly about anything. And to me, my heart just sunk because I hated to think that that was the first time she had ever expressed her voice in something. And then, well, it also just illustrated to me that she was in such pain that she was actually willing to voice up in a way that she never had before when the costs were lower. That to me was a representation of the probability that that marriage was probably mired in a lot of one up grandiosity and one down shame. And I think that is oftentimes the product of a patriarchal marriage. And so moving into a faith journey with that as the foundation is going to be absolutely rocky on every level. I mean, take the traditional garden variety rocky that's going to happen even in a very healthy, thriving, egalitarian LDS marriage, and throw on the grandiosity and the shame of the one up male and the one down female, and it's going to be possibly nuclear and really, really painful for both partners because they're behaving in such a different role than both of them are accustomed to that it is going to be disorienting to literally everybody involved in that situation. With that, kind of connected, but it could also be a totally different, it could show up in that situation, but it also may show up in different situations that are not connected directly to patriarchy, but oftentimes couples have very low conflict negotiation skills. For many of us who spent a lot of our lives in the more traditionally believing space, we really had some sort of black and white fundamentalist views, and that is very closely correlated with emotional immaturity and the inability to know how to tackle tough topics where a lot of big feelings are coming up. And so again, oftentimes couples find themselves well out of their skill set in negotiating very, very challenging emotional situations and not knowing what to do and how to move forward, which is oftentimes why a lot of explosive anger ends up sort of being curtailed into a deadly silence. And this is tricky because when I work with my couples who are working through faith crisis, I'm actually an advocate for the importance of healthy conflict. However, I also can acknowledge that there are some marriages where there is no skill set around anything that even close to resembles healthy conflict, meaning that if there is an argument or differences of thoughts or feelings or opinions, it quite quickly turns into psychological and verbal abuse rather than two people respectfully stating who they are and what they believe and respecting the other. And so it does start to feel as if two people are in well over their heads because they don't have the skill set to navigate complexity, but they also don't want to live in silence forever. And I mean, this can range anywhere from couples who are actually silent to one another, meaning they kind of engage in the stonewalling thing, which John Gottman has long since shown in his research is one of the four, he calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, meaning that it's one of the four indicators of the end of a marriage is when two people just shut each other down. They stonewall one another. They pretend like the other is not there. That is on the more extreme side of silence, but also some partnerships, quite a few actually, especially early on, they just sort of put the actual conversation itself on a shelf. So ironically, someone in a faith crisis who has taken down their shelf, deconstructed the shelf around the faith, has actually constructed or co-constructed with their partner a whole different shelf where they set this topic up on there and they won't talk about it with one another. For these couples, I would recommend couples counseling for sure. And I would also recognize the importance for both partners to do some personal psychological work, because oftentimes in the most hostile of situations in a marriage, what is probably coming up is childhood ways of adapting to high conflict or high distress. And if you're really interested in that topic, I would recommend you go to my course number 3 of my couples guide. It's called Stress Management and Sharing Your Narrative. This is a really important class for couples that are in a high conflict situation in their marriage because of somebody's faith crisis. What is going on in your marriages is probably you're responding to ways of managing conflict that probably at some point in your life were adaptive, but are no longer adaptive. Meaning that in this class, you're going to be learning about how did you manage distress when you were younger? How was it modeled? What did it look like? It's possible in those younger years, there was not a healthy modeling of conflict negotiation, of healthy differentiation, of secure attachment. And so you show up in a conflict situation now, and it's almost like a regressed version of yourself and your partner show up. It's not like two 40-year-olds are discussing something. It's like two 7-year-olds are discussing something. And so couples counseling for high conflict or highly avoidant partners is indicated, in my opinion, because what you need is you need to better understand why is it that you are handling the situation as you are. And it's probably for very logical reasons based on early childhood adaptations, potentially or possibly an early childhood trauma history. It also has to do with your attachment styles between yourself and your primary caregivers clear back in your childhood. So all I'm here to say is that oftentimes if you're in a huge amount of conflict because of a faith crisis, it's connected to what's going on in the here and now, but there's probably a lot going on underground that has to do with your historical relationship with stress, distress, abandonment, fear, and the desire to maintain relationship at all costs. And so I would definitely jump into some marriage counseling because you're going to need a third party to work yourself out of that. Oftentimes it just feels it's too big, it's too scary, it's too much. And the cost is just so high. If you take a low or a minimal skill set in how to manage complicated situations, and then you layer on top of that perhaps the most existentially frightening, complicated situation in your marriage, especially in the context of an LDS faith crisis, because we've got eternity in the balance, we've got eternal isolation, we've got families together forever, we've got kingdoms of glory. You take all of that and you just roll it into a ball, and it is crisis. It is a huge, massive nuclear problem. And so my hope is in offering this to you is tons of validation that if you're feeling overwhelmed, it makes sense. This is a lot of things coming together, and a third party is helpful. And that's why I do these consultations, these packages. And that's why most of my consultation packages, incidentally, are married couples, because this very thing is hitting them. And the cost is so high because so many of these couples actually, in fact, really love each other. They just don't know what to do next. Okay, for the latter part of our episode and to end this entire series, I just have two more things that I want to touch on. So I wanted to spend this part of our episode talking about what I notice is the arc of a marital relationship that ends up surviving. And then I'm going to talk about what is the arc of a marriage relationship that ends up dying, either literally when a marriage dies and it ends up in divorce, or when it emotionally dies and they stay married. Okay, so why don't we start with the more depressing part first, and then we'll end on a high note. How about that? Okay, so here we go. So just as far as the arc goes for those marriages that are just struggling so much and they don't get the help they need and they don't end up surviving. And again, what I mean by that is sometimes they stick around and stay married, but it's a tough situation and their marriage is not a thriving marriage. Okay, so usually when somebody goes into their faith journey, there is going to be high conflict or high avoidance. If there's conflict, they're going to be talking about theology and history and social justice issues. they're not generally going to be talking about their emotional experience. They're not going to be there for one another, supporting one another in the distress that each of them are legitimately feeling. And so the high conflict is topic based on those marriages that end up suffering the most. Next thing that happens is oftentimes because they recognize, at least on an implicit level, that they don't have a skill set, there starts to be either silence or avoidance. They sort of move into a stalemate where the marriage sort of drifts because they acknowledge they don't know how to deal with it. They don't get the help and they don't move forward. They recognize it's almost like we just don't talk about this thing and we move forward. But the cost of that is oftentimes devastating because what it means is you're splitting a giant part of your soul and estranging that part from your partner. And that is on both sides of the equation. The more traditionally believing partner can't say what she or he is experiencing in the pain and suffering, as well as the faith expanding person. Both of them are in a faith crisis and in a relationship crisis. And because they can't come together and they don't get the help they need, oftentimes it just ends up that things slowly die. And this is not what I want for you, which is why I'm saying these things out loud. I see this over and over and over again, y'all. So I want to be, I don't know, a voice of warning, I guess. Another thing is that I notice in some of the partnerships that struggle the most is one partner sort of becomes or maintains a parent role over the other partner. This again is generally just an exacerbation of a dynamic that was already existing, and this can go in either direction, but there is going to be a maintenance or a perpetuation of a one-up dynamic and a one-down dynamic. And so if you're noticing that in your marriage, you could be either one, by the way. So just notice if you don't feel true equality in your marriage and you don't deal with it, that is generally, in my opinion, a warning sign for a marriage that is probably going to continue to struggle until both of you look at what's going on there. Because no matter what, if you're the one up or the one down, you are both participating in that dynamic, and that needs to be addressed explicitly and healed, because healthy marriages are marriages of equality. Okay, another dynamic that I notice in the marriages that struggle the most is sometimes couples will go to therapy, but when they go, any number of these things can happen. Number one, they can go to somebody who doesn't understand the nature of faith crisis. I'm not here to say that the person you go to has to be connected to LDS faith crisis. I do think it's probably helpful if they have the conceptualization of all of the idiosyncrasies of our tradition. I think it would be important that your therapist understands the nature of being part of a covenant religious system, because I think that's a big piece of what makes this so painful. But make sure that if you are a couple that wants to get help, the thriving ones get help from somebody that understands the lay of the land and truly wants to dignify the experience of both partners. Something that happens with the couples that stay in distress, even through counseling, is either they get stuck in the quagmire again of topics, of discussing who's right or wrong, or what, you know, the right way to approach a social justice issue or a theological or a historical issue. Those are important, but those are peripheral to what's going on in the actual dynamics of the marriage itself. So if you get stuck in that sort of quagmire, that's a red flag in my opinion. Or if you have a relationship therapist that really sort of sides with one partner or the other. And as you well know, I do a lot of couples work, and I am constantly on guard with myself that I am truly wanting both partners to know how much I love and care about them. And I'm wanting to dignify both of their experiences and talk about how the differentiation journey requires that both partners let the other be a self. And so you'll want a marriage therapist who isn't perfect, because I guarantee I'm not, but you want one that is not taking sides in this particular issue around letting people be where they are on their journey. Let's spend a couple of minutes talking about what happens in the marriages that survive and end up thriving. You'll see beautiful examples of this both in the series that we are just finishing up right now with Katie and Jeremy. And also, if you go back to episode number 107, it's titled, Can a Marriage Survive After One Partner Departs the Plan of Eternal Orthodoxy? This is Brian and Jenny, other dear friends of mine. And this is one of the, if not the highest downloaded episode on the entire platform. And it is, again, it's a beautiful walking through of crisis that leads to deep and profound marital intimacy. So I'm here to say there are couples that can do this, you all. And both of these couples, make no mistake, they didn't have it easy. They went through the valley of the shadow many, many, many times over and probably have more to come. And so they are making it very, very real. It's not like theirs was just a simple, quick thing. It hasn't been and probably won't be. They're still going to be doing some growth. So the couples that end up going through this and thriving are also going to probably have some really, really rocky weeks, months, and maybe even years. My hope is it's not years as in many years, but I want to normalize that based on all of the reasons that I have broken down in this actual episode, we have a lot of barriers before us if we are on a faith journey in a marriage with a partner that's in a different space. And so I want to normalize and prepare you for the reality that there is going to be dramatic chaos in most of these marriages, especially at the very, very beginning. This is typical. This is normal. There needs to be a huge reorientation of reality. There needs to be a grief period around this dream of the Mormon family covenant path. Everything looks a certain way and is as expected, and all of our Mormon dreams coming true as a couple. I don't mean to be flippant. I'm not trying to sound flippant about that, but I think that it's important for us to explicitly notice that for many of us, starting in our young childhoods, we had an idea in our minds of what this was going to look like according to our Latter-day Saint heritage background. And when one person goes on a faith journey, even if they don't disaffiliate, but they just decide and feel called to worship even more broadly or expansively, and they have a different way of thinking, feeling, believing, and belonging, it's going to look different. It's going to reflect on how people relate in different key moments of the marriage and family life. And that just needs to be grieved, and probably grieved anew as new things come up, because things are going to be needing to be acknowledged over and over and over again as different life events pass. And so typical chaos, probably power plays from both partners doing it from a place of their own distress and chaos, managing in their own perhaps maladaptive ways in the beginning, and then a grief period where people recognize this is going to be different. Now, how long this wrestle goes on, I can't begin to tell you. It's going to depend on your marriage. But at some point in time, for those marriages that survive and come to thrive, they do go through the grief period. And at some point in time, both partners recognize that this marriage is stronger than this particular issue. Both partners end up deciding, I choose you over all other outside considerations. I choose you. So in the course called Establishing Safety as a Couple, the very first thing I do after introducing myself and trying to help both partners feel like I'm a safe space is I spend a considerable amount of time inviting people to tap into their resiliencies. They came together for a good reason for the most part, and you love each other and have probably gone through a lot of hard things before. And so once we get through the initial chaos, oftentimes we're able to, again, remember how resourced we are as a couple. Some of these couples have been through disease and financial hardship, death, real big struggles, and they were able to get through it. And so they remember, oh yeah, we can do this. We have done hard things. And combined with this moment, or lots of moments probably, where partners say, you know what, I choose this marriage. I'm reminded of what Jeremy said in one of the episodes. He decided that his theology, the very thing he learned as a boy at church, was that love is the most important thing. It's the most important way to worship God. And he realized, you know what, I'm going to do that very thing that I learned at church. It's just going to feel different and look a little different. And it was in that moment that he was able to sort of soften into his journey and really, really privilege this beautiful woman that was challenging all of the rigid beliefs that he had up to that point held so tightly onto. He was able to sort of loosen up and relax and really, really choose what it looks like to truly worship Jesus Christ and embody the love of God. Thriving couples also recognize that personal work and accountability is necessary for both partners. I don't know that I can emphasize this highly enough. If both partners don't recognize that each of them have a lot of psychological, personal growth and development to do, then I do think that the marriage is at a very high risk of at very least not thriving and possibly not surviving. Both partners have to lean into the fact that we are here to grow. The marriage is a growing machine, and that people are primed to grow in the context of marriage, especially if we love one another. It's going to push us to our limits of patience, of love, of trying to be self-confronting, and that this very experience of faith expansion is a perfect environment for people to become very, very self-aware and to recognize that I am part of this and I want to be as loving and accountable as I can be on this journey. And the marriages and the partners that really recognize that psychological and spiritual growth and development is an important part of their, I guess, responsibility as a human being and a married partner, when that is acknowledged, generally things end up going well, if not in the short run, at very least in the long run. I mean, it's not to say I don't want to oversimplify and say these things are just simple. They're not. But so much can be overcome when people are able to self-confront and really look at themselves without shame and without thinking that there's something wrong with them because they're on this growth journey. Next is the partners that thrive end up growing a competence or perhaps having a competence to repair. They recognize that all relationships are cyclical, meaning that we move from attunement to disruption to repair over and over and over again in these relationships. And the partnerships that recognize that all of these are viable and all of these are necessary for a healthy relationship and that they can address each one of these in their ongoing and growing relationship, these relationships end up doing quite well because they acknowledge there's nothing wrong or unusual or bad about disruption. And they also recognize that repair is sacred and that repair is actually one of the things that defines a healthy relationship. The absence of disruption does not define a healthy relationship. It's the repair of the disruption that defines the healthy relationship. Couple more before we close. The relationships that thrive as they work through their mixed faith marriage struggles is that both partners acknowledge that they need to be humble, that they need to listen. They need to look into one another's eyes and acknowledge that I am with somebody who is wholly other and who is divine. And when they can look at the partner and truly see them as an embodiment of God, different, beautiful, sacred, complicated, maybe sometimes a little bit annoying, but pretty amazing also, when they can truly see the depth and breadth of that soul over whom they have the beautiful opportunity to do life with, then they can soften into all of the inevitabilities that are going to come as they take one situation at a time. And they start recognizing that, you know what, this is less about what we're going to do next week or next month or for the next family event or for the next thing that needs to be negotiated. But they recognize, you know what, this is a beautiful journey and we are capable and we are competent and we are so lucky that we get to do this together. And they lean into the process as if nothing has gone askew, but they are on schedule as growing, evolving human beings, privileged to be a witness of the other's unfolding life. And the couples that get that, even though they fall and pick themselves up again and fall and pick themselves up again over and over again, they recognize that there's something incredibly sacred about the process itself. And they're recognizing that maybe the most sacred part of their marriage actually began when this faith journey began. It may have been that sort of all of the things that happened when they were very, very lockstep with each other was just, maybe that was the preparation for when the real marriage began. I can't thank you all enough for your trust in the work that I do and for your support. If you have not yet done so, would you please pause and rate and review the Latter-day Struggles podcast? Your ratings and reviews actually really help other people feel like we are a trustworthy source. And in this space, it is so important that people have testimonials of others. And I want them to know that my heart is to heal and to bring people closer to God and to their own potential higher self and to the people whom they love the most. And it is for that reason I produced this and every episode on the Latter-day Struggles podcast. So thank you all for being here, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Latter-day Struggles. Your support for this podcast is extremely valuable to us. If Valerie's work has made an impact in your life, please consider leaving a 5-star rating and review. For info on webinars, classes, support groups, and live events, click the link in today's show notes or visit our website at latterdaystruggles.com. Latter-day Struggles is a proud member of the Dialogue Podcasting Network.
Dialogue Podcast Network.